You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo, good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Man, doing good. Yeah, doing good. It's been a bit busy, you know, around the old shop. And, man, just slinging a lot of pipe tobacco. And online sales are picking up a little bit for Father's Day, so that's kind of fun. But, yeah, just selling a lot of pipes, selling a lot of gifts. And, you know, it's really hot in central Mississippi. We complain about this every time this time of year. And
yeah, right.
And so, you know, I just you know, when you're outside, you just it's hard sometimes to power through your pipe, and you know, you just have to smoke something really strong and get to the point, and then go inside and take a ice bath. So, and it's only June.
Well, I mean, the nice thing about the Country Squire is, with us, everybody kind of returning back to the world, all vaccinated and ready to rock. People are congregating again, and man, the Squire is such a great place to do it because you can escape the heat while also enjoying your pipe.
Dude, you escape the heat, but you know, at the Squire, you fall into your own a different type of heat.
That's
true. You
kind of
when you come to the shop, you have to. I've just been noticing this more and more. The thicker the skin, you have to. If you're going to become a regular at the Country Squire, you just kind of have to have this shell around you. And I've been so proud of Quinn, our new employee who's been quarterbacking our mail orders and is doing such a good job updating our website and everything. But man, he's learning quickly. You just got to throw it right back, man. People throw it at you, you got to throw it back. So, so it's good. I'm proud of him.
Good stuff, man. I'm looking forward. It was funny because obviously I just got back from this little family vacation. We were down at the beach and. We got back, we're starting to think about holidays and trying to figure out when I'm going to make it back to Jackson. And honestly, I just don't even know. I have no clue when I'm going to make it back to Jackson. My guess is it won't be anytime soon. But I am going to be up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which I'm really excited about, man. Like, this is in about 2 weeks, I think, from when this episode goes live. We'll be heading out that way, and I've yet to reach out to the pipe community there. I need to. I guess this is the official reach out. I'll make sure to send out an email and a few texts to see who all might be available to hang out for a little bit. But yeah, man, this was something I used to do like on an annual basis, and then we moved to Houston, and then we moved to Houston, and then the world shut down, and so now we're we're ready to get back at it and visit the in-laws up there and see the good folks up in Grand Rapids. So
well, it'll be good, man. A lot of good friends up there. And matter of fact, recently we had a listener of the show, Jim Lung, came through. He actually was with his mother, but they took a tour of the Southeast, and he made a point to come by the Country Squire and bring us some choice beverages that we might use on a future Squire Select episode, which is pretty cool. Some local Michigan fare, but anyway, gave us a warm hello from all the people up in Grand Rapids and in that part of Michigan. And so, yeah, it's good, man. It'll be nice trip for you.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, we got later on in the episode, we'll be reading about a pipe pilgrimage that happened to the Squire recently. So I'm looking forward to get into it. We got a fun episode planned today. But of course, first, we need to give a shout out to our amazing supporters at patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio who are making this podcast happen every single week without fail. We could not do it without y'all. And man, we got some new members. We actually got a new member for the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. And this is difficult for me. Because it is a long-standing tradition that if you join the pipe club, I butcher your name. But unfortunately, I know how to pronounce this person's name because I've had the pleasure of working with him before, and I need to. All right, hang on. Let me stretch. All right. I think I can do it.
You think you got this one ready?
I think I can do it. All right. Joining at the pilgrim level, Collab Francart. Collab Francart joining at the pilgrim level. That's right.
That's great. Caleb, thank you so much for joining, man. Man, it's wonderful. We're glad to have you on board at the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club and joining at the pilgrim level. That's awesome.
That's right, man. And like I said, we've got later on this episode, we got some great listener feedback from Caleb is referring to a pipe pilgrimage they recently took. So looking forward to sharing that. Man, we also got to give a shout out to patron Bo Prather. As well, who is supporting the show just at buck an episode. We, even those bucks an episode, man, they go a long way. So we appreciate
everybody's
support.
They do, man. They absolutely do. Yeah.
Let's see. Any other shop business before we dive in? Because I'm eager. I'm eager for this episode.
Yeah, no, it's drinking day because it's Squire Select Day.
Squire Select!
And man, I just don't want to delay it any further. No extra shop news, really. We've got some new inventory coming in from, Denmark and the UK and Germany and some different fun places that we're excited to announce very soon. But in the meantime, today, we're going to talk about tobaccos and alcohol.
That's right. Okay. So I mentioned, of course, I was at the beach last week. Okay. Beautiful time. And even as we were recording, I said, I have a feeling, John David, I'm going to get back and I'm going to have a hankering for some rum. Like, that's where my head's going to be at. It's going to be in that, mindset. And, there are times that we have the Squire Select, it comes about every 8 episodes or so. We do a Squire Select episode, and it's a standard. It's a long going tradition here on the show. It's an ongoing series. And there's times where Squire Select comes about and we're kind of scrambling. We're like, all right, well, what haven't we drunk yet? I mean, we have to kind of go through and just try to find something. And, maybe the bottle stands out to us or whatever it is. Or maybe it's literally we do a quick search through our catalog. And, if we're lucky, we find out that we didn't cover it. Or, if we're unlucky, we did cover it and we just didn't find it when we were searching it. And then we do it.
And we do it anyway.
That's right. Not that that's ever happened multiple times.
Exactly.
But this week, man, the beverages that we have this week, I'm so excited about, because this is the reverse of that. This is when I first had both of these beverages, Squire Select was screaming to me. It's like these require a pipe pairing, and they are such unique, drinking experiences. Despite them both being rum, they have bring such varying, flavor profiles and everything else.
Yeah.
And I got a little story about each of these, nothing major, anything like that. And that's the kind of spirits that I love diving into for a Squire Select. So it is the excitement high.
It is for me, man. I mean, this was a lot of fun, and we're doing a couple of rums today. And I'm not, I'm not much of a rum drinker. I always enjoy it when I have it. It's something that, is enjoyable to me. I drinking it straight. I enjoy cocktails that are made with it, and have a lot of fond memories of rum based drinks and that type of thing. But I'm not really a rum guy. It's something I don't really pull for very often. So, every so often when we do talk about a rum, it is a good stretch for me, and it's a lot of fun, man. And this was good because it was something different and sweet and interesting. And these rums are very different, man, just very different. I can't wait to dive into them. But yeah, dude, you got me fired up on this.
All right, I also have to pull a little bit of the curtain back here as well, because we're doing another thing different this week, and at least in terms of how this episode is coming together. Because generally speaking, you're right there next to the package store. You've got access to the great spirits, right down the I think like 2 or 3 doors down from the Country Squire.
Yeah,
so, you got the hookup. Typically, you go in there, you get some stuff, you pour it into a mason jar, you mail it to me, and it's amazing. This crazy trust exercise and all that.
If you're from the Texas Department of Revenue, you didn't hear that.
No, not at all. allegedly, that's how right. this is made. My apologies. Allegedly, that's how it goes down. Well, allegedly, this time we're kind of doing that in reverse, because I got all these test tubes allegedly, and was able, and because we have such a great diverse catalog of spirits available here in Houston, we kind of switched hats a little bit, and not only did I allegedly send you these two, but I've got us covered allegedly for the next couple of Squire Selects. Allegedly, is that enough? Allegedly, we need a legal counsel on this show, don't we?
Yeah, I know. Tag a lawyer. Yeah, no, it's, man, that's right. We're just thrilled, regardless of how it worked out. Whatever fairies got these beautiful, delicious liquors to each one of us, it worked out great. And man, we're excited to talk about them today.
All right, so let's kick this off with Havana Club, if that's cool. Is that a good one?
Yeah, I think that's good, and that's a great place to start. Man, was this your first time to drink Havana Club? Have you ever had it before?
This was my first time, and in reference to kind of the stories around these rums, this one jumped out. I was There is actually a Cuban restaurant, authentic Cuban restaurant, very near nearby my house. Of course, you know, Houston, Texas, we've got some of the best food in the world, access to just the most amazing, authentic foods from all over the planet. And yeah, there's this amazing Cuban restaurant that's like right down from my house. And one day I was just kind of, I had a hankering for Cuban food. Don't know what it was, just had a hankering. And my wife and I, she took a lunch break. We went down and we went to this particular restaurant and sat down. And it's one of those, you know it's authentic when you look around and you're like, oh, I feel like I'm not even supposed to be here. You know what I mean? Like when you stick out like a sore thumb, it's like, oh, okay, all right, this is going to be good.
That's what you want. Yeah, exactly. The food's going to be great.
So we sit down, we have these amazing Cuban sandwiches and you know, the plantain chips and all kind of the fixins and whatnot.
Yeah.
But up on the wall, they've got a kind of a artistic rendering. I guess it was like this oil painting of this like glorious like Cuban feast with like this bottle of Havana Club rum and a cigar like right next to it. And I'm like looking at this as I'm eating this amazing food and I'm like, I want that. Like I want that. And so,
what number is that on the menu? Is that number five? I'd like a number five.
And I'm telling you, this was not. I mean, like maybe it was like a promotional thing, but it looked like literally this was like somebody's art project. It was an oil painting and everything else.
Yeah.
And, it just really spoke to me, and I was like, I want all that. Except instead of a cigar, I want a pipe. And so I went down to the local spirit store. I picked up this bottle. It's my first time ever having this, and I remember very specifically because I got this. I reached out to a buddy at church, and I actually ordered a couple more Cuban sandwiches, and we drank this with some various pipe tobacco.
Yeah,
and then had those Cuban sandwiches, and it was a great combination. But I want to know today what I could have done to upgrade this. But first, let me ask you. let me ask this back at you. Is this your first time having Havana Club?
It is not, actually. This is a complicated question because Havana Club, this is a longstanding brand. It's been out there. This name has been on liquor store shelves for, almost a century now. But that is a complicated question to ask because if you could distill drama into a bottle, it would be Havana Club.
Wow.
It would be Havana Club. This is an interesting liquor, an interesting spirit that has developed quite a story, particularly over the past 40 years. It's something that just because of dynamics between the Cuban government and United States government, and then the businesses that are involved in the original factory, the family that was forced to leave Havana with the recipe. There's a lot of background here, and the answer is, this the first time I've ever had Havana Club from Puerto Rico? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. But yet there's another Havana Club that is sold worldwide under the exact same name with a different logo that is a Cuban made product. And so, man, lots of drama here. Talk about lawyers getting involved in lawsuits, man. It's kind of out of control, but yeah. So this was the first time that I ever had the Puerto Rican version of Havana Club. Yeah,
man. So, one of the things that's notable, it's a very, if you kind of look at the bottle, you got kind of the black label to it. You've got the, I'm kind of looking at their logo, and it's like this like overgrowth tree on a cross or something of that nature, like surrounded by what appears to be kind of wolves and lambs kind of walking in step with one another. You know, very, very peaceful, theoretical, almost heavenly, tranquil, yes, depiction here, despite the drama that surrounds it. The bottle reads, "Every bottle of Havana Club starts with the finest sugar cane, molasses. The rum rests 1 to 3 years in oak barrels as the Caribbean weather of Puerto Rico works its magic. We then employ a double aging process, creating a deep and mellow taste with a velvet finish."
Delicious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Really interesting rum here. So, just to kind of elaborate on what we mentioned before, Havana Club, this brand, again, been around for almost a almost a century. And the distillery this was founded at, or is still made in today, was initially founded by the, I'm probably going to butcher their name, so I'm going to channel Bo here for a minute, the Arcabala family, and they were Cuban folks that founded this still in the 1870s, and then Havana Club was kind of a brand that you know came forth from that in the mid 1930s, and so this you know was a rum that was sold in the United States and you know for many years and all over the world, and of course in Cuba and across the Caribbean, and this little event happened in 1960 that made everything really complicated for you know any industry that was associated with the island of Cuba, and of course the liquor industry is front and center, the tobacco industry is front and center. We think about all the incredible products from both those sides that you know have some kind of Cuban heritage, Cuban lineage, and in 1960 a little event called the Cuban Revolution happened, and a man named Fidel Castro decided that he wanted to nationalize the Arcabala's distillery and the Havana Club brand. And so they did nationalize it. That is code for they took possession of the distillery at gunpoint.
Right,
And literally.
Acquired
and so
it, you might say.
they acquired it, yeah. And so the family was actually forced to flee in exile to Spain and to the United States. And the distillery at that point was owned by the Cuban government, which is, you know, just fascinating. There's a lot of examples about this. We've seen this in Cuba and places like, of course, the Soviet Union, Venezuela, you know, where you've got these private interests. They have built these companies, and the government decides that they, you know, want to take this over and make it a kind of an entity of the people, for, you know, so to speak. And so so they just take it, and they don't compensate the, you know, the owners or anything. And before you know it, now the, you know, government of Cuba is in the rum business, and they kept it going there for quite a while. So Cuban version immediately, of course, became, after the embargo, along with cigars and so many other things, became not available in the United States. And so, you know, it was primarily because of Cuba's ties to the you know, Soviet Union and in the you know, communist world. It was primarily available in places like the Soviet Union, the Ukraine, Eastern Russia, and then eventually became more common in, you know, Western Europe and places like that. But of course, not the United States because of the embargo. It's so fascinating because over the years, you know, this was a rum that, you know, kind of, you know, propagated throughout the world and is incredibly popular and has this very interesting taste and is very complicated and, you know, just storied. But it was being made by, in some sense, you know, the depending on who you ask, kind of this imposter group, you know, who nationalized the factory there. And so the family had jealously guarded the recipe for this for years. And in 1994, the family that had been exiled from Cuba, they sold the recipe to the original Havana Club to another company that you might have heard of called Bacardi. Now, one thing you may not know about Bacardi, you know, when you think of Bacardi, you think of rum and college parties and you know, mixed drinks that give you headaches and bats, right? You know, but Bacardi is actually the family name of another family that was exiled during the Cuban Revolution. Man. And now is their headquarters for that brand and that family is also in the Caribbean. I think they've moved to it's either Antigua or Jamaica. I can't remember the country, but anyway, but Bacardi has moved to this new location, and so they, you know, they actually during this process, you know, had at the time of the Cuban Revolution, the Bacardi family had developed, you know, distilleries and factories outside of Cuba, and so they were able to kind of pivot pretty quickly and start production from their other facilities. And the Arcabala family didn't have that luxury. They were a Cuban family, a Cuban factory, Cuban you know only, and so they you know just didn't have the ability to start pivoting that you know, that recipe to other areas. And so anyway, they jealously protected it. 1994, sold it to the Bacardi family, and Bacardi began making the rum in Puerto Rico. And, you know, so you've got this rum that's, you know, being made in two different places, right? That both claim to be the original, both claim to be the heritage using the original either recipe or facilities or whatever it might be. You know, and so there, some of this stuff is sold worldwide. Some of it is basically just for the United States market. And there's this fight, and so they're getting after it. Bacardi eventually starts just selling this in Puerto Rico and Florida, but then in 2012 there was a big court battle, and you know, they kind of got some leeway to start selling this product in a wider geography, and so you start seeing the Bacardi Habana Club you know, propagate kind of throughout the United States, and it's pretty readily available now. You know, so which Habana Club is the real deal, right? Is it the Puerto Rican one that we're drinking here today, or you know, is it the one that is not available in the U.S. the Cuban Havana Club, and it depends on who you ask, you know. The Cuban Havana Club is sold all over the world. It's the fourth most popular rum in the world, but, you know, the Havana Club made in Puerto Rico is from the supposedly the original family, the original recipe, and is made in the, you know, nearby island of Puerto Rico. And so, yeah, you just you've got to pick your side, you know.
Wow, I mean, it sounds almost like a ship of Theseus type of situation.
I don't even know what that means.
It's a thought experiment recently made repopularized by WandaVision. But the concept is that you got the ship of Theseus. Over time, pieces start to rot, and so they're replaced with newer pieces and that sort of thing. However, the rotted pieces kind of collect. And if the rotted pieces were to be reassembled, what would be the actual ship of Theseus? Is it the one that's been repaired over time, or the one that's, you know, made with the original components?
It's actually a great point, and it's kind of hard to know, you know, the direction to go in. And you know, there's analogies to this, even with pipe tobacco. You know, you think about the old Dunhill blends.
Yes, sir.
And they were made, of course, by the Murray factory, and you know, now made at Scandinavian Tobacco Group, then under the name Dunhill, and now under the name Peterson. And it's like, well, are they the same tobaccos? I mean, they say they use the same recipe, and you know, all that, but it's kind of this Frankenstein thing. And so, which you know, which one's built all together? Yeah,
man, that's, you know what, that actually might
kind of fascinating.
I don't know if there's a show there or not, but like the whole ship of Theseus concept as it relates to pipe tobacco and like pipe tobaccos that have been through that, like, you know, lineage and process of, you know, being remade and rethought through, that is something to explore for the future. But I am ready to explore this glass that is screaming at me right now,
man. Absolutely. Let's crack it open.
So one of the things that you made mention of already is that this is a complex rum. And I think that for a lot of us, we might associate rum with just kind of something that you throw in, you know, some sort of, you know, fruity or sweet beverage that you're sipping on, you know, the coast. And you don't normally, or at least I before this rum, never really considered rum to be something that was necessarily sippable. Like, it's not something that I would go to, like, specifically to drink straight up.
There really is. You have to be introduced to the right rum in order to consider it a premium spirit. I mean, I think so many of us, you know, from those early days are like, well, you know, you just mix it with Coke and then you wake up the next day and hope that you remember what happened, kind of deal. a good rum, it's like a good scotch. You know, there's a demarcation there where at some point you're like, oh, that's why people like this.
right. But so that's the thing, right? This is a complex rum, and it is very, very sippable. It does have kind of like there's like a charred nature for me, especially with the finish of it in particular. But at the same time, it's very smooth.
And
it doesn't come across as overly sweet. You kind of take him for a little bit of a ride with it, because it does start off smooth, but in my opinion, kind of ends up a little on that charred side of things. And that kind of smoky finish is, I'm all about that.
It's interesting that smokiness lends itself to this kind of oak barrel flavor, which is unique for Cuban rums. We're talking about a rum that tends to be a little lighter and oakier. It lacks some of that real viscous, super sweet flavor that some of the Cuban rums possess. But yeah, it has this kind of woody flavor that comes in towards the end, the smokiness that's very very pleasing, very different. It's an interesting taste. You know, as far as the color of the alcohol goes, it's a very you know, kind of a nice clear color. It's not too bold or dark. It doesn't look too intimidating. But then you drink it, and it really does coat your tongue nicely without being overpowering or cloying. It's very, very good. Yeah, you know, admittedly, I'm not much of a rum drinker. There's this, you know, these battles between folks that are like, well, do you like the Cuban version or do you like the Puerto Rican version that's the original recipe or whatever you like? And so, you know, everyone kind of goes in different directions. There's a lot of folks that swear by the stuff made in the Cuban factory. But, you know, the more I go through life, the more I think about things like that are just... in a lot of sense, it's like, well, you know, it's people love it because they can't get it, you know?
Right, exactly.
And I do wonder about that. But all in all, I think the stuff made in Puerto Rico, the Havana Club, is really good. It's a tasty rum, you know, and I haven't tried the Havana, the Cuban Havana Club in quite some time. So I you know, am not going to be able to really do it justice in comparing the two. Yeah. But this is a very tasty rum. It's something that, again, it has this kind of lighter, oakier flavor to it that than a lot of these super viscous, very, very sweet rums have. And for me, that's a pleasant thing. It's very, it's not something that weighs you down, which is very good. So this is a great, great, you know, beach sitting rum, I think, and certainly something that's very sippable. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to make mention of this too, because like the sweetness factor is not high, but at the same time, it does have the sweetness. Yeah. It just comes across as cane sugar. Yeah. You know what I mean? As opposed to like syrup or something of that nature. I mean, there's that molasses nature to it, of course, but like there's a very like cane sugar, raw sugar that's there, but it's not like overpowering. You know, it's kind of mixed in with that smoky finish. And, you know, it's funny because normally, you know, I come to the table, man, I'm ready for you to tell me what to smoke. But as I mentioned, because of the method in which I enjoyed this the first time was specifically to be paired with pipe tobacco, I went through a number of pipe tobaccos in my cellar and kind of landed on one that
about to do a pairing?
No. I don't feel. See, that's the thing. No. I in your presence.
Nah,
never.
You should. Absolutely. I demand it. No, that's great. I wish you would.
All right. Well, I'll tell you from our experimentation what I think we found to be a really good pairing, and that's for me. But I want to know what you were going to pair it with, and I think that obviously we should all go with whatever John David paired with. But Taps VIP, man.
Really?
Like, was a really good pairing.
I hadn't
for
heard
us.
About that tobacco in a long time. Dang.
It's been a minute, but it's been in my cellar, and it's good. It's a good pipe tobacco, and it goes really well with this rum. So I had to throw that out there because, you know, again, I'm not the expert here, but because of the nature in which I kind of discovered this rum,
that
and
is
because
funny.
There was so much different, like, the variety of pipe tobaccos being sampled, in correlation with drinking this this beverage for the first time, I had to kind of give him a shout out because
that
I
is
it was
cool.
A good pairing.
I had forgotten that you really enjoyed that tobacco, and you know, I hate to break your heart, but that tobacco is not available anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm aware.
Really,
I'm aware.
Really
sad. Dude, I hang on to some stuff in my cellar.
Like. One of your favorite tobaccos that Bo is you know, mentions on the air. It's like you know, if you ever want a tobacco to go like out of production or out of business, just get Bo hooked on it because he likes to find all the ones that don't make it or don't last. But man, that was the Daughters of Ryan tobacco, and man, beautiful Virginia Perique. So that's cool, man. That's great. I'm glad you found that connection. I went in a decidedly different direction on this. You know,
hit me. Let's hear.
Yeah,
it.
You know, for me, this was a rum that wasn't overly sweet, not super. You know, had that viscous kind of you know, deep. Syrupiness that sometimes you do crave in a rum. And so I appreciated that the rum was not those things, but I wanted to augment that with some extra mouthfeel, the lightness of this particular rum. I wanted to kind of, you know, double down on some of that rich, you know, syrupiness that you think of coating your tongue. And, you know, for me, it is almost like a, you know, delectable treat, something to, you know, to drink after a dinner, almost in line with a, you know, with a liqueur or something. You know, this does almost have like a, we talk about the oakiness, we talk about, you know, some of the light, you know, or the sugar cane that's there. But then there's also this kind of almond flavor that's really there, almost like a amaretto or something. It's very, very fascinating to me. I just had a lot of fun drinking it, and I'm having a lot of fun drinking it right now, Bo, out of my test tube. But
allegedly,
my alleged test tube. But yeah, so pairing it with something that would kind of amp up that that level of mouthfeel to give it a thicker, more you know, more rich, robust kind of roundedness, and so went with one of the best-selling aromatics on the market, and that is Cornell & Diehl's Autumn Evening. Evening, this is a good pair, I think, for this particular liquor, because it does you know, kind of ramp up some of those characteristics of sweetness and gives it a little more thickness. It's you know, something that the texture on your tongue really, I think, benefits from. But also, Autumn Evening has already kind of a sugary rum flavor to it. There's a mapleness there, but there is a rum topping on Autumn Evening, which for me just kind of makes it a really nice, you know, drawing the bow kind of together around the gift. And so I really enjoyed this particular one. But Autumn Evening, you know, it's sticky, it's sweet. It's something when you open the tin, you immediately are hit with the room, you know, the note of the tobacco out of the tin. And so it does have that sugar there, but that maple rum is really nice and just coats your mouth very pleasantly. So you know, if you want to kind of lean into that sweetness and maybe ramp up some of that mouthfeel, I think the Autumn Evening is a good pairing.
Yeah, that's great direction to take it in. It makes a ton of sense. Have to try that. I've never actually had Autumn Evening, so
yeah.
I'm excited to
you ought to
pick
that.
Some up to.
Yeah. It's Cornell & Diehl's best-selling tobacco. They've, of course, they have
is that right?
10,000 different tobaccos that Cornell & Diehl makes. They have so many. And, you know, but this, of all the literally hundreds of tobaccos that Cornell & Diehl makes, this is their best-selling one. Yeah. And is a aromatic that, you know, a lot of aromatic smokers have come to love over the years.
All right, man. Good good pairing. All right. So we're about to change gears.
Boy, are
significantly.
We.
All right. So as I mentioned, I got a little story to go with both these, a little personal story.
Yeah.
This next one that we're about to enjoy, I won't even bury the lead. I'll just go ahead and say it's Bumbu Rum. Okay.
Yep.
Bumbu. I keep on wanting to say Bumbo because there's the Bumbo seat.
I've been calling it Bamboo.
Have.
Yeah.
Bamboo.
It's Bumbu Rum. That's right.
Bumbu Rum. Now, this came about in a very, very special time because, you know, my children are getting a little bit older than they were as children. And, you know, when they were growing up, especially like when they started going to school, you know, my oldest was very nervous about going to school.
Yeah.
So while I would, you know, drive her in the car, I would start kind of telling, I would make up a story and tell it to her in the car. And I would always leave it with a cliffhanger.
I just love this. Like you're leading into the introduction of a rum that you say
rum,
you've got a personal story about. And then you talk about your daughter being nervous
driving.
About going to school
yeah.
while in the car. And it's right. like, so I'm just waiting for the point where you crack open the alleged rum and give it to your daughter so she makes it through school.
John David, come on now. No, that's not it. You've known me long enough that I always bring it home in the
I'm
end.
Kidding, but it is, you know, I couldn't help but drawing some of these conclusions. Anyway, go ahead with your precious story, Bo.
No, that's fair. That is 100% fair. But anyway, yeah, so, you know, she was nervous, and so I would tell her these stories, and I would always leave it with a cliffhanger. In fact, the story has been going on for several years now because it just keeps on ending with a cliffhanger. And the story, as, you know, Country Squire Radio listeners will not be surprised, is about pirates. It's a pirate adventure story, right? Yeah. And so, I've told the story. And then over time, especially as we kind of entered into the pandemic season, I started to get a little creative. In fact, I got a bunch of little wax seals and I would send the kids on these little treasure hunts around the house. And at times, you know, kind of borrowing a lot from escape rooms and that sort of thing. And incorporating the quest that they were on, the little treasure hunts that they were on, into the stories that I was telling. And, you know, as I mentioned, they're getting a little bit older, and also we kind of need to bring this thing to an end. And so I was trying to think about how I was going to end this story. And at the same time, we had some people coming over, and I was going off to the store to supply up for a bit of a cookout and that sort of thing. And I needed to pick up some rum. And as I was walking by, I'd been contemplating this character of like this, like, you know, villain for the story, a pirate hunter, right? Because in the story, these are like pirate adventurers, yeah, and yeah, we need a pirate hunter and that sort of thing. And so I was going to pseudo base this character off of a pirate that we've actually covered here on Country Squire Radio, which is Benjamin Hornigold. And however, the fictional version that I was kind of creating was Ben Hartigold. And Ben Hartigold was a very evil pirate hunter, and he needed a symbol. And as I was walking down and kind of contemplating, you know, this and life and everything else, I see this beautiful bottle that looks like it was floating in the ocean carrying a pirate map of some sort, with this cross, this kind of a crooked golden crossbone looking symbol.
Yeah, almost like crossbones. It's hard to tell, but
almost like crossbones. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like crossbones. There's almost like a little bit of like a Norse inspired to the kind of the symbolic nature
of it. Yeah, I can see that.
Lot going on with it, but at the same time, very simple. And I was like, that's it. That's the symbol of Hartigold, this super villain that I'm creating to kind of conclude this story with my children. And so I pick up this bottle, not knowing anything about it, like, you know, other than the fact that it looks cool. The symbol of it is going to work for the story I'm telling, and I need some rum. Then I sit down, John David, and understand that I've been drinking the Havana Club, right? Like I've been in that world,
right,
of rum.
Right.
I pour a little bit of this, and we're in a different direction altogether.
And you are not kidding, man. You are not kidding.
That is how I discovered the bamboo rum. So with that, I'm going to toss it to you. Let's talk about some bamboo.
Man, it's kind of bizarre, really. I don't know. We are going in a very different direction from the Puerto Rican Havana Club. Wow, these are two incredibly different experiences. Bamboo rum made in Barbados. Proudly, they state that is the home of rum, first created some 400 years ago, is what they say, and that probably is true. Made from sugar cane from across the West Indies, they claim the water in that part of the island is so pure, just because of the limestone and the granite there, that they don't have to filter it. This is a water that goes through all these layers of rock, and so it's just an incredibly pure water. And then, of course, that paired with the use of the sugar cane from a variety of places across the West Indies, it just makes this fantastically interesting rum. And it is very interesting. It is quite something. Looking at the rum again, Bo, you mentioned it's got this kind of skull. It's not a skull and crossbones, but it's kind of like it may in your mind kind of evoke the two bones maybe underneath a skull and crossbone.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a gold X.
Yeah, it's an X, right? It's got this real kind of gnarly look to it. It's interesting and fun and evokes those thoughts of pirates and buried treasure and old crushed up maps that are have been found buried and all this kind of stuff. So it's really, really pretty interesting. You open this bottle and smell it, and it is just...
All right, whoa. Yeah. Before you say that, I have to know first, was this your first time?
Very first time.
Okay,
yep.
When you cracked open the alleged test tube,
yeah,
and you took a whiff,
yeah,
what was the flavors that came to your mind?
Initially. The very first thing I thought of was bananas. The very first thing, and it is like in your face, like it's like they were going for bananas.
right. Okay, all right. That's what I wanted to know, because it's interesting when I talk to different people about this. Like, I remember drinking this rum,
yeah,
and like not knowing how I felt about it. Like, I'll save my final review for once we get there. But like, I remember being like, I just had to keep on drinking it because I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. And the banana, like, you're exactly right. The room note, if you will, the tin note, if you will, the bottle note, if you will, is very bananas. And that's in the flavor as well. However, there's another very strong flavor profile that comes out in the drinking, especially.
Hmm. Well,
did you get, did something else jump out?
Why don't
to you?
We have a sip?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. So we have smelled the bananas, and the banana is in the flavor. I mean, like, it is definitely in the taste as well. However,
it's there. It's there. What else are you getting though? You seem pretty passionate about this this other flavor that you're tasting here. Let us in.
So it's interesting because of the smell in particular, and it that combined with the flavor profile of just the taste, you continuously get bananas. However, there is also a very, 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 very strong vanilla.
Yeah.
That is in this, a very deep vanilla flavor that's in this. And it's interesting because I couldn't quite put my finger on it until it was pointed out to me. And I was like, oh, yeah.
It's vanilla.
And almost, yep. it's very strong. I mean, like, you're almost drinking Banana Foster with this rum, if you can imagine that.
This is such a strange liquor. And you know, it's a rum. It says it's a rum. I mean, it's made of sugar cane and it says it's Barbados and all that stuff. And you take it at face value and it's like, well, let's judge a book by its cover and all this. And it's got the, you know, little crossbones on the front of it, the X that's all beautiful. It looks like a, buried treasure map and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it is, this is an interesting, wild, tasting, of alcohol. It really is. It's, just something that I've never had anything like before. Over the top of vanilla. Obviously, we've mentioned this banana flavor that's very fascinating that you just don't really associate with really, really any kind of liquor. It's something that just really pops you in the face and you're like, wow, that's one way to do it. right, there's an allspice taste that kind of comes in the back, this semi-sweetness that touches different parts of your mouth. And then there's this kind of underbelly of roasted nuts there too, that you get. But all these are characters that are, just supporting the main actors, which is the banana and the vanilla. Wow. So it's very, very fascinating. You know, we are saying all kinds of interesting things about this particular rum. The reviews online are equally decidedly mixed. This is a polarizing alcohol. It really is, because it's like I said, they say it's a rum, but then you drink it and you're like, that's
I've never had a rum like this before.
Yeah, it's just so interesting. You know, it's pretty fascinating. Diehard fans of this love that. It's very flavorful. It has a lot of sweetness. It's different. It's something that makes you think of maybe plantains or the islands. You know, would go well with a mixed drink. And of course the branding of the cross and the X and the corked bottle, and folks have a lot of fun with that. And so you've got these fans that have really leaned into that. And then you have the haters that are very much out there about this rum. And they've branded it as the rum that tastes like banana Laffy Taffy. And, it's like, the marketing for it is almost this kitschy thing that you'd see if you were making a cartoon and you wanted a bottle of rum in the cartoon. Right. And so, it's got its haters out there. And so, it's interesting, man. This is a fascinating liquor. I'm glad I tried it. I don't know if I'd buy a bottle of it again, but.
It's very like it.
But yet so I'm glad I tried it. I am glad I tried it. It's
I think that everybody should try this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's
I wish they made it in a pint.
Right. Right. Well, so that's the thing. This is not in my opinion, and I've done a lot of research. This bottle is almost empty. And again, it's not necessarily empty out of just like extreme like enjoyment per se. That I didn't. I mean, I did enjoy drinking it, but it wasn't like because like, oh, this is my favorite. It was literally such a perplexing experience that I had to keep going back to it and figure out like, do I like this? Do I not like that? Like, I don't know. I'm so confused. And here's what I've kind of come to. Bumbu is kind of like a port, or kind of like a dessert wine, if you can imagine that. If you've never had a dessert wine before and you just kind of go to it like thinking you know what wine is and then you have a dessert wine, it's going to confuse the heck out of you. You're not going to know what to do with it in the right circumstance. Bumbu is kind of like that. This is very much a dessert rum. I really want to figure out some kind of dessert recipe to make
some way
this.
To like, utilize this. Yeah, that's not. No, I do. That's not Bananas Foster. You know.
No, but like you know, I've cooked with various spirits before. In fact, actually, I, you know what? As I'm saying this out loud, I know exactly what I'm going to do with my next bottle of Bamboo. I'm a big fan of every single New Year's Eve. We make a figgy pudding. And we do the whole thing where we, you know, get some fine brandy and we light it on fire and we kind of pour it over and everything
else. This would work well with that, I think.
This would work extremely well with that. Yeah. In fact, you know what? I'm going to make some sticky toffee pudding, and that is exactly what I'm going to end up doing with it. I'm going to flambeau it with Bamboo. Like, this is perfect for cooking. And it's not bad for sipping, but it is not necessarily something you want to, like, drink. Like, this is not like a glug type of beverage. You know what I mean? Like,
it really favors a liqueur. It really does. Yeah. This is a very sweet, viscous, thick, superlative drink. You know, it's
a little bit goes a long way.
It does. It definitely does. And so, and if you don't like sweet alcohols at all, or you're, you know, one of these pipe smokers that you know would never touch an aromatic in a million years, this is probably not the rum for you. It just probably isn't. Right. It's pretty interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, good call. It would probably be a good thing to cook with. So, as far as
all right, so this is the thing though, because I first, you know, one of the other feeling I got when I first tasted this, aside from just general confusion, was what on earth would John David pair with this? Because this is so very different from anything that we've ever paired on Squires.
This took me a long time. I really had to do some soul searching on this particular one, because this is a weird liqueur. It's just got a very different character to it. When you go into this, you're thinking one thing, and then you drink it, and you're like, well, I don't know what that is, you know, and I don't. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. I needed something to ground me. I really did. I needed to kind of come back to home base for me on this. I needed something that was going to balance all the wackiness of this particular thing and just be like coming back to a safe, you know, warm sweater or a safe, you know, very comfortable chair that I knew inside and out type of thing. And so, so I went with the old favorite. I went with Old Gowrie from Rattray's. I wanted a tobacco that was very, very tobacco-y, very in your face about just being an honest, working man's, you know, earthy, rich, you know, grassy tobacco, something that would just, you know, make sure you knew you were at home, like sitting at grandmama's house, you know. And Old Gowrie, of course, been around a long time, a very highly sought after tobacco right now. All the Rattray's blends have been that way for a few years. And it's a Virginia, Darkfire, Kentucky, and Perique blend. And they press this, of course, at Kohlhaas in Germany, and then, you know, put in the tin. But it's a just a wildly popular tobacco. It's more robust and, you know, just has a lot of natural flavor to it. And I needed that groundingness after such a wacky liquor. And that's about the only thing I could figure at, you know, as I kind of did a lot of soul searching and tried different things. This was where I kept coming back to. So so anyway, Rattray's Old Gowrie, I was really really pleased with that, and frankly needed it.
Man, and I think I've got some of that in my cellar, so I might have to
With
what I've got left, I might have to make that pairing happen. You know, one of the things that we love about Squire Select is it's all about kind of the various flavor profiles and getting all of the different tastes that exist in all of these different spirits and all of these different pipe tobaccos. And, you know, someone else, some folks that really appreciate the need to get, you know, every single flavor profile out of your pipe tobacco are our good friends over at Missouri Meerschaum, who make some quality corncob pipes for a good, cool, cleaning smoke to make sure that you're not going to ghost the cob. You know, you're going to get the goods.
You're going to get the goods, man. Yeah. I mean, of course, we love the folks at Missouri Meerschaum and really appreciate them for sponsoring this show. They make the best corn cob pipes in the world. They're an iconic American company. And one thing that they make that a lot of folks don't know that they make and is perfect for a Squire Select is a Missouri Meerschaum shot glass.
Hey-o.
And it is available on their website, man. Go to corncobpipe.com, and for $4.49, you can buy a Missouri Meerschaum genuine shot glass featuring the classic corn cob graphic on the front of the pipe. And it's actually got little measurements on the side, so it's perfect for making those consistent cocktails.
Wait. Hang on. How long have they had this shot glass?
It's a new product.
I was about to say, I'm learning yeah. something on this episode. Like, wait, I was about to say, like, we should have been doing Squire Select out of the Missouri cool. Meerschaum shot glass for a long time.
I know, man. we're going to grab some because they are exactly what we need. Yeah, it's just a perfect pour. And I like the nice little addition of the measurements on the side. So you can use it as a you know, great little fun shot or as something where you can measure up a perfect cocktail. Yeah. So check it out. Go to corncobpipe.com. You can order it, and they will send it to you straight from Washington, Missouri, and we know you'll enjoy
That's right. Good quality products and a quality brand to be able to get behind. And hey, if you've got any Missouri Meerschaum merch, be sure to rock it on the Twitters. We love to retweet them out, letting the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week. All right, man. Pipe question of the week comes in from Al. Man, Al. Come,
Al.
Al's coming in. And I kind of feel like this question's tugging on Superman's cape a little bit. But I'm going to ask it to
silly.
You. No,
it's a great question. I'm happy to answer.
Okay. All right. All right. Here we go. Al says, "I have old
tugging on Superman's cape." That's ridiculous.
I'm just saying. All right. Here's what it is. He says, "I have an old Toby question. Old Toby, of course, a pipe tobacco at the Country Squire." He says, "If you have a second to answer, is the Perique the musty, earthy cocoa part of the blend?" Or is it from toppings and casings? I've never had it before, and I'm trying to figure out if Perique is something I enjoy or if I'm ascribing an interesting taste to the wrong thing. Thanks, and that again is coming from Al. Now, I say this is tugging on Superman's cape because it is documented well on this show. In fact, actually, when we had Russ on the show, I think he made mention of the fact that, like, you know, John David doesn't talk about what goes in his blends. You know, like,
I don't.
That's something.
I don't. That's what pays the bills, man. Right. That's the moneymaker.
Proprietary information.
That's right, man. It's always good though, and folks are welcome to ask. And I feel very comfortable shooting everybody down. But man, old Toby is one of our most popular blends at the Country Squire. Of course, we have a whole lineup of Tolkien themed blends that we're proud to have at the shop. And folks have asked us to make more Tolkien themed blends. We've kind of played that out. We're not going to do any more along those lines. But old Toby is the most popular of all those. It's a very, earlier in the show, we talked about autumn evening, just very lots of different confectionery flavors, some rum, very sticky. Old Toby is reminiscent of that. It has a very, sticky quality to it. It's a crowd pleaser. It's something that you're probably not going to put in a $500, Dunhill Shell Briar, but, grab one of your favorite aromatic pipes, poke it in there in a party or, nice time outside, whatever it might be, and you're going to enjoy this tobacco. It's something that is really a lot of fun to smoke. So, the Perique, Al is asking if the Perique is the musty earthiness that's in this blend, or is that flavor, the musty and earthy, kind of coming from the toppings and casings? And the answer, of course, is yes. it's both. It is. We are obviously going to jealously guard kind of the ingredients on our tobaccos. I will say, Al, if you're trying to figure out if Perique is the right thing for you or if you enjoy Perique, I have to say, Old Toby is not the blend to do that on. The flavors in Old Toby, surely the mustiness that's there, the spiciness, the little hint of pepper, the earth, that is definitely being contributed to by the Perique in that blend. But there's a lot going on in Old Toby that we're very proud of that is also contributing, particularly to that earthiness that's there. The variety of ingredients that we use that you know are also contributing to that earthiness. So toppings and casings, that plays a role as well, particularly in the earthy and kind of cocoa elements that are in that. In that tobacco, the mustiness is probably coming more from the Perique. But I will say, if you're trying to get a handle on if you like Perique or not, Old Toby's probably not the tobacco for you to determine that by. So, let's maybe think about another tobacco that, would be a good measure of that. And if you can, try to order some straight Perique. You can call our shop and we'll be glad to send you some, or, a lot of the online retailers or your local tobacconist may have some Perique too, but Ben, just try to get your hands on an ounce of it, and smoke a little quarter bowl and see what you think. Maybe mix it with some of your other blends and see how it changes it. See how it mixes with some things that you know inside and out. But anyway, I'm glad you tried Old Toby, and we appreciate it, man. We're gonna leave you guessing on some sense, but I'm glad you're. I hope you're enjoying it.
Yeah, and Al, I'm giving you a hard time, but it's a great question, and thanks so much for sending that in. Hey, if you've got a pipe question of the week, be sure to send it in. That's show@countrysquireradio.com. show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback. All right, man, we got listener feedback. So I mentioned this at the top of the show, but Caleb, or wait, what did I say? Collab.
Yeah, collab.
Francart, new pilgrim, did write in this week about a recent pilgrimage that he and a buddy took to the Squire. And why don't you go ahead and take on that one?
Yeah, this is great. Greetings, John, David, and Bo. This past weekend, I made my pilgrimage to Jackson with my best buddy, Jason. We have become big fans of the show over the past few years and always talk about how your friendship reminds us of our own. After the 12-hour journey from Northwest Ohio, we arrived at the Squire and immediately felt at home. It was like walking into Cheers, and boy, that's about like walking into the Squire. Dominique and Carson were great to talk to, as was our new friend Bruce. Oh man, you met Bruce and you still like us. That's fantastic. To commemorate the journey, we walked out with a couple of Bing's favorites and a bunch of great memories, not to mention a pound or two of the good stuff. Keep up the great work at the shop and on the show. Hope to see you next time. Thanks. And that's Caleb Frankert. Caleb has his own podcast, and this is kind of cool. You're a little more familiar with that, Bo. You want to
elaborate
on that?
Caleb and Jason, they're both hosts of the Old Fashioned Finance podcast. We made mention of this actually while you were out, as I kind of did something that is very, I don't normally do, which is to kind of recommend a show that I'm actively working on, as I just typically don't do that. But this is such a good show, guys. If you haven't checked out the Old Fashioned Finance podcast, I really strongly recommend it. Great financial advice, but not boring. They trick you is what they do. Like they're very like personable, great personalities. If you like the energy of this show, you would love that show as well. And they mix it with old cocktails as well. So it's a great one to make mention of on the Squire Select episode.
Yeah. So. Old Fashioned Finance podcast, and Caleb and Jason, really cool, man, just so tickled that they got to come through. I hate that I missed them, but I know, that Dominique and Carson took good care of them. And, man, if they met Bruce, they're just part of the family. Gosh. If they engaged with Bruce and didn't leave and immediately burn our shop to the ground, they're family.
is Bruce the new Hurricane, or is just Bruce
let's just say they get along really great.
Oh man, all right, that's great, guys. Thanks so much for that feedback. And hey, if you've got some feedback for the show, you can of course email it in show@countrysquireradio.com. you can also head over to iTunes and write us a review there. We love getting those in. Doesn't cost you a dime to do it, but if you are willing to spend a few dimes to make sure this show keeps going, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, where you can join the International Country Squire Radio Pipe Club and get a lot of benefits there. You can also keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow the show at Squire Radio, or John David at John David Cole, or the shop at _CountrySquire. But all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Well, man, I know that you're not a rum guy, but I kind of feel like you nailed it in terms of both the pairings and just kind of, you know, expanding the palate.
I hope so. Thank you. I worked hard at it. I did. And man, had fun. I know the Puerto Rican Havana Club is something that I'll be reaching for again. And the Bumbu, I'll be interested in your flambe.
I'm very curious. I'm telling you, man, I'm going to cook with it. We'll see how it turns out.
Yeah, I love the old Gowrie portion of our pairing. I did myself a solid on that.
Well done. All right, man. Well, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.